is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
So my name is Kathy Scott and I'm a soil scientist. I work for the NRCS, which is the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We're part of the USDA, a federal agency. And we were formerly called the Soil Conservation Service. And we were formed back in the Dust Bowl to help prevent erosion and assist farmers in trying to retain their soil and improve the fertility. So that was the genesis of our agency. And since then, the agency has grown, and we're also now involved in assisting farmers and ranchers with projects they would like to do on their land that are good for the land as well. So in the past, we've given them assistance for new kinds of irrigation systems. We'll pitch in a little bit of matching money if they improve their existing system to be more water efficient, that sort of thing.
You mean the soil itself to be more water efficient?
Their operation. If they're a producer, if they're an agricultural producer, if they do improvements on their land, and this changes year to year, the programs that are available to them, but we will provide assistance to help prevent soil erosion and promote the more efficient use of irrigation water. Anyway, that's a little bit about myself. I have a bachelor's degree in soil science from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Yay.
And and I work with folks here in the Sonora office who are from a variety of backgrounds. We have doctors of soil there who have PhDs in soil. We have a couple of graduate students who have graduate degrees. And I work with a plant ecologist. And our office is located in Sonora, but we serve the area for soil services throughout the Sierra Nevada and the foothills. So our area is quite large. We do a little bit of traveling to get to the more far-flung areas of our jurisdiction. But our office's primary focus is on soils, determining different kinds of soils across the landscape, making maps of those soils, providing the maps to landowners and potential landowners and land managers free of charge, and helping them interpret the maps that we give them so that they can get the most out of the soil that they have and overcome any soil limitations that may be inherent on their land.
Is it mostly like the valley and the foothills where a lot of things would be grown, but not necessarily the mountains where things just grow on their own?
Well, we provide soil maps we have contiguous maps for the entire United States, regardless of the use. Now, early on, soil surveys were produced for agricultural lands. And then once those were mapped, we moved on to areas that were not so heavy into agricultural production. But as the years have gone on and we've worked on these soil surveys, it's become apparent that the soil resource is important for much, much more than agriculture. So anything that has anything to do with building, road construction, flooding, ponding, kind of watershed management, people use our soils data to calculate how much water, when it falls in the mountains, how long does that take to get down to the valley? And what kind of filtration is happening and what kind of output you can expect in the river. There's just so many applications for soils data that it's moved far beyond agriculture. Mm. That was our basis, but now We've got a product we call Web Soil Survey, which I'll tell you a little bit about later. But it's a free application that you can go online, or you can come into our office and we can help you if you don't like to operate in the online environment. But you can get a soil map, and it will tell you the suitabilities and limitations of the soil that you've selected for your area of interest. Mm-hmm. And there are 400 plus different interpretations that you can choose from. If you're interested in a building and you want it to have a basement, you pull up the table for that. It will tell you what the suitability is on that soil for that use. If you want to plant an orchard, if you want to build a road, it's just so many different things to think about when you're doing development on your land. And most of them in some way tie back to the land you're on and the soil that you're on, and that's what makes it either challenging or fairly simple to do the project. So our data is available free of charge, and we're here to help. The motto of our agency is helping people help the land. Mm-hmm. And that is, it all ties back to just uses of the land, and soil is the basis for all that. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about the different kinds and varieties of soil that we find throughout our area, and how these different soils formed, because that is what makes them appear different on the landscape. I will talk a little bit more about Web Soil Survey, and at the end, if you would like to, I would love to teach you how to hand texture the soil in your yard or in your garden, because so many applications, if you go and look at guidance on gardening for so many uses, it'll say, well, if you have a loamy textured soil, mm-hmm. you do this. If it's clayey, you do this. And knowing how to determine that is actually a really useful skill. So if you're interested, I brought some samples, and we can go about doing a little field exercise. So what is soil? So as a soil scientist, we define soil as the loose, unconsolidated material at the surface of the earth that is capable of producing plant life. And so it's a very broad definition, but you know, from the valley on up to right up to the tree line, that stuff is capable of producing plants. So you may look out across the Sierra and think, oh, that's all rock. Well, there's also trees there. And where there's trees, there's soil. And so so that's how we define soil. And that differs from dirt in that dirt is defined as a soil out of place. So dirt is when you get your garden soil in your house on your floor where you don't want it, that's dirt. If it's in your car where you don't want it, that's dirt. If it's where it should be and, you know, fulfilling its function, that is soil. So it's kind of like, what's the difference between a plant and a weed? Well, a weed is a plant where you don't want it, you know. Same with dirt. It's just a soil where you don't want it to be. So we prefer the term soil. So with that, I would like to tell you a little bit about soils in our area and how they form. So when we talk about soil formation, there are five factors that determine what type of soil will be formed in a particular area on the landscape. And those are climate, the organisms that are available at that place, relief, which is the topography of the land, the slope, the aspect, whether it's concave or convex, the parent material, which includes the rock type that it came from, the method of transport of that material. Did it arrive via a flood, as in on a floodplain in the valley? Did it arrive via a landslide that came down from above and collected? All that sort of parent material information is important in determining the soil that is formed from that material. And then stretching over all of that is the factor of time. The longer a soil sits in a particular place and develops, the more changes that occur in it, and it goes further and further from its original source rock and becomes a different sort of animal that has structure, the color changes, the chemical composition changes, so time kind of stretches across all those other factors. And in addition to that, we talk about soil processes. So there are four processes in soil formation. There are additions and losses, and additions can be the falling of organic matter from trees or shrubs onto the surface of the land. That's giving organic matter additions to the land. New material can be deposited, as I said, from a flood or a landslide or just rolling downhill. Losses occur when there is erosion, like on a steep slope. You get a rainstorm, you're losing soil and it's ending up at the bottom of the hill. So there you've got a loss, but also an addition. So the loss is from here, the addition is down here. And the soil that's on this steep part, even though the source rock may be the same, you get a very different soil at the bottom of the slope. So additions, losses, translocations, materials and minerals move from the top of the soil down through the soil. So this is an example of what we call a soil profile. And these are horizons. And you can see that the color changes from top to bottom. And that's because there are different translocations and transformations happening from the top down. So here, this red layer is red because of a chemical reaction that is called oxidation. And the iron in the soil has actually rusted. And that is the red color. And also, if you were to squish this up, you find it's kind of hard. It's much harder than the stuff on the top. And that's because there's more clay in this middle stuff than there is in the top stuff. And the clay has moved through time and collected basically at the depth where the rain reaches every year. So every year when the soil gets wet, the clay that's inherent in that soil moves a little bit further down the profile, and it all ends up piling up at the depth of about where the water reaches every year. So these are all transformational things that happen to a soil as it ages, and organic matter is turned into humus. So the leaves are turned into a very fine like composting material that is very important for the soil's ability to retain water and provide nutrients to the plants. It also provides structure. So the way this is stuck together is quite different than the stuff at the bottom where it's just like a sandy thing. The stuff at the bottom is very unweathered. Well, a lot of times this stuff is stuck together not only by the clay, but also by organic compounds. They're kind of sticky. And so organic matter plays a huge role in soil development. So there's a little bit about the five soil forming factors. So I talked about precipitation, or talked about climate being important in soil development. So this is a little graphic of, this is Calaveras County and this is Tuolumne County. And this is the area that is covered by our soil survey that we just finished last year for this area. Up here is Forest Service land, and they have their own soil survey, but for this graphic, it's sort of truncated. And this graphic is showing how precipitation changes as you go from the valley on up into the higher elevations of our area. So down here, you get less than 600 millimeters of rain precipitation a year. Up here in the blue, you've got over 1,200. So you're getting twice as much precipitation here as you are here. And that water amount that's available for helping the soils weather into what they are is very important, because water is one of the primary chemical weathering processes in the soil. So the more water you have, the faster your soil will form. And it also, water is important for transporting materials. So obviously, you know, through rivers and stuff. And in general, the warmer your soil is and the more moisture environment, the faster soil will develop. When it's a colder, drier environment, your soil develops much more slowly over time. So this helps to explain a lot of the differences we see as you move up and down our, from our, you know, the valley to the foothills to the mountains. Because of the
hot, dry climate then would be slow to
develop. Yeah. So, yes. So, and that's because there are many, how to explain this? Well, not only the available water, but the temperature plays a very important role in that bacteria are, when they're happy, they are doing a very active job of helping to break down the minerals in the soil. And there's kind of a sweet spot. They don't like to be too hot and they don't like to be too cold. So as you move up and down from hot to cold and moist to warm, you get different kinds of bacteria living in the soil, and those the activity of those bacteria determines to a large part the rate at which the soil forms. So if it's too dry, they're still there, but they're struggling along. Yeah. If it's too hot, same thing, the bacteria are still there, but they're struggling along. So you just kind of, as the environment improves for those bacteria.
So maybe in the spring and the fall, the bacteria are a little more active than
they are.
Like in our hot summer.
They are, and that's why if you have a compost pile, there's not much decomposition that happens to that organic matter during the very cold season or the very hot season. If you don't have enough water, you know, things just kind of stop. To keep that compost going and breaking down the organic matter, you need to make sure there's a little bit of moisture in there, and it's not too hot baking those little dudes, and it's not too cold where they're just like inactive and almost hibernating. So yeah, I mean, it does sort of change diurnally with
the bacteria seasons. Is good for the soil.
Absolutely.
Now, what about weed killers, the chemicals that people use? Like my neighbor, his whole place looks brown. He sprayed everything. How does that affect the soil? Or after the rain, does the chemical go down the creek? Or what happens?
Well, I can't really speak to what happens in that particular situation, but it is true. If he's using a chemical that goes into soil solution and is water soluble, that chemical will probably move through the soil with the water, end up somewhere downhill. And if he's killing all the vegetation on his soil surface, you are then cutting out that whole organic matter addition to the soil that bacteria rely on to live. So he's making his soil sterile. And that is actually one of the definitions of soil is, it's not only loose, unconsolidated material that can support plant life, but if you do something that disrupts that ability to produce plant life or support plant life, it's considered a non-soil. You can kill it.
Wow.
So
if he leaves the plant material there to break down, is that okay? Or is that
it helps? Yeah, it's definitely better than killing it and then burning it off. Although burning does, you know, produce organic matter as well, but hauling it away would probably be the
worst
for the soil. It would probably be the worst thing to do. So it's a very, everything is interconnected, and you don't do one thing to a system like soil and can't expect a repercussion somewhere down the line. So,
well, if we feel that it's damaging the wildlife in the creek below, is there any recourse?
I don't know.
Anyone we can complain to?
I don't. That's really outside of my responsibility.
Sorry.
It's okay. I mean, I just don't know.
Well, there's about four places in our neighborhood that they've just sprayed everything.
Yeah. The neighbor across the street from me does that.
It
looks like a moonscape. I'm like, I don't know.
If this chemicals last for a long time, because they do it like maybe every 2 years, it lasts a couple of years, and then it's eventually things start growing back again. So maybe it's not going that deep.
I don't know. Yeah, it would depend on the chemical he's using and if it binds to the soil. Because some chemicals are less mobile in soil than others. It would depend on what he's using. So it's very possible that it's not going really any further than his little watershed. You know, maybe he's just affecting his soil. I don't know. There's so many different things that he could be doing to it to make it that way. So I don't know.
Now, do you recommend raking leaves like under oak trees and let people rake them and burn them, or to just leave those leaves?
It depends on your...
Doesn't that form good stuff?
Sure. It depends on what you want, though. If you... Yeah. It's your land, so if you want to remove them because you think it's sort of a fire hazard, you know, it's just something else to catch fire, then you should remove it. If you want it to form a nice dark O layer on top of your soil that makes bacteria very happy, then you should leave it. But there's so many choices to make.
Like a mulch, what it is.
There's so many choices to make, and it's all kind of a personal thing. So it depends on what your use for that land is. Just like when we talk about soils, we don't talk about good soils and bad soils. You have to know what you have planned for that soil, because what makes a soil good for one use might make it completely unacceptable for another use. You know, it's very subjective, and it depends on what you want out of your soil, whether you remove those leaves or you leave them. Yep. So we've already been talking a little bit about the organisms, because there's climate that affects soil development, and organisms. And so that involves not only vegetation, which we've talked about a little bit, falling onto the soil surface, but also down to the bacteria that we've talked a little bit about. The bacteria are very important in soil weathering processes. As bacteria eat organic matter and excrete waste, that waste is actually in an acidic form. Just as the roots from living plants exude acid as they take in water and it mixes with oxygen, when they exhale under the earth, that is an acid. And that acid is very important for breaking down the minerals of the rocks and making soil. So there's a lot of chemical reactions going on in the soil naturally to let it go from a rock to the soil that we grow things on. So organic matter is very important. The other thing that bacteria do is they can transform inorganic materials like sulfur and nitrogen. They, through their just living processes, actually make those elements available to plants to use. So sulfur in its elemental form is not able to be taken up from the plants, but once the bacteria get to work on it, then it becomes plant available. So the living part is very, very important to a soil. The other thing that organisms do, especially plant cover, is they help prevent erosion. And this is probably obvious to most of you. If you have a hillside covered with plants, it is much less likely to lose soil in a rainstorm than when it's bare. All right, and we've already talked a little bit about the next factor, which is parent material. So parent material of the soil is just what it sounds like. It is the material from which that soil was born. And that includes inorganic materials such as rock type. Soils vary in their composition based on the rock that they came from, and you can tell just from the color where these soils came from. Organic.
That first one that you held up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that granite?
This is granite.
And so these soils in this box.
This is a granite soil.
That's a granite soil.
Weathered from a granite soil. Yep. This is actually from the High Sierra. This is above tree line, but there are still plants that grow on it. They're generally small, they're forbs. This soil is named Polemonium, after the plant that is very commonly found on it. Since it's up so high and so cold, the soil formation is very slow. And so the soil that weathers from this rock ends up looking a whole lot like the rock it came from. whereas down in the foothills where you have a lot more, it's a lot warmer and the soil processes really get to cooking along, the soil changes quite a bit from its original source rock to what ends up in your garden, in your lawn. And that's because the temperature is more amenable to decomposition of these rocks. So the type of rock makes a big difference. Ash can be a parent material in different parts of the Sierra. That's a big constituent, and it adds glass to the soil, which has its own properties. So that the type of material that soil forms from has a lot to do with how that soil acts in the wild and if you try to manipulate it. So ash can be a type of parent material. Wind sediment, I worked in the Southwest for a long time, and we have a lot of loess soils and aeolian deposited soils, and those are literally very fine sands or silts that are blown from afar, and they pile up and develop their own soil, and they have very different characteristics than our soils here. Glaciers, the area up above town was glaciated several times, and the glaciers will carry material with them when they encroach, and then as they recede, they leave rock material. So that in the High Sierra, that's a very important parent material is glacially deposited soils. And they have their own set of challenges and characteristics. They tend to be very compacted because that ice on top of them, grinding them down, will make these very dense layers in the soil that we call densic layers. And they are almost impermeable to water. Roots have a hard time getting through. But if you actually dig a hole in it and you chip it out, you can just crumble it right up in your hand. But it's because of the way it's packed in there. So the soil physics have been affected by the mode of transport. So it's all very interesting, and there's a million ways to make the soil. And this, I mean, I'm just trying to illustrate how we end up with so many different kinds of soil across the earth. There's a lot that goes into it. So I'll talk a little bit about the geology of our area. This is a geology map of this part of California, and I just want to call your attention to, this is the foothill area here where all the stripes are, and this is the coastal range where all the stripes are. You will know if you walk across the land here or you drive across the landscape that the geologies change quickly as you move across the landscape. And that is because our geology tends to be vertically oriented, whereas in many parts of the world, geology is laid in a horizontal fashion. You'll have silt, you'll have sandstone, you'll have some loess on top. Well, here it's vertical. So this is a little cartoon of the geology in the Murphy's area. So as you go from this part of the county to this part of the county, you will travel quickly through areas of metamorphic stuff from metavolcanic. This is slate. This is metasedimentary. This is topped by a lahar deposit. And on and on until you get up into the granite areas at the higher elevations. And it is tilted that way because of the tectonic plate movement, and you probably are aware that the ocean tectonic plate and the California plate are moving towards each other. So soils are being formed on the ocean floor from little fissures or large fissures in the floor, and the material cools and forms rock and sediments on the ocean floor, and then that floor, through the movement of the plates, is constantly being subducted underneath California, right where our coast is. So as that happens, all this plate stuff from the bottom of the ocean gets stacked up. And when it gets stacked up, it kind of gets smushed like this. And so over the eons, this is how we've ended up with this.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate,